well, well, you made it back to another episode of Kristen and Chill. You must be a glutton for punishment or for high-quality entertainment, because that's what we provide here at Kristen and Chill. No, it's not. No, it's not. That's my dog in the background. She won't stop barking because she loves me so much and just won't stop telling me. And frankly, it's getting a little annoying. I like being loved, but just not this much. If you guys would hold on just 1 second, I'm going to... Okay, hold on 1 second. Okay, I'm back. Turns out she doesn't love me. She's just hungry. We often confuse the two. Anyway, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Kristen Carney. And are you a fan of true crime? Well, that's great, but also too bad because we're not going to be talking about it today. However, I do have one of the hosts from the podcast True Crime Garage, which is a super awesome true crime podcast. And he goes by Captain, or The Captain. And you need The in there. Because Captain, that's a nobody, but The Captain, that's a somebody. So The Captain is on from True Crime Garage, and we get darker than I had expected. I thought we were going to stick with the Kristen and Chill vibe. We have half Kristen and Chill vibe, half mentally chill vibe. So stay tuned for some depression talk and suicide talk and not so fun talk. However, I find a way to disrespect it somehow, so it's not too heavy. Anyway, if you enjoy the show or if you like to disrespect things as well, please share the show with a friend. The more it grows, the more you grow. Just kidding, the more I grow. But I really need the show to grow. And I can't do that without your support. And you guys are so awesome. And the people who listen to the show are so dedicated and so cult-like, which is so flattering. And I wish I could be a better cult leader for you. If we want to grow the cult, please spread the word of the show to your friends, to your family. If you don't have family, my deepest apologies, but if you could go adopt one to let them know about the show, that would be very, very helpful. And if you'd also like to rate the show, five stars only, that would be amazing. The more ratings, the more easily the show is searchable or findable, I don't know if that's a word, on podcast listening platforms. So please rate, please subscribe so you don't have to download every week. It just goes straight to your phone or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you listen to a podcast anywhere but a phone, welcome to 2019. Get on your phone and don't get off of it. Actually, recently, I shut my phone off on 4th of July. I should say, this podcast that's airing right now or coming up, I taped several weeks ago, so it's a little dated. It's not, you know, mullet dated, 1980s dated, but it's a few weeks dated. And so the podcast I taped this week will come out next week and I talk about 4th of July. But anyway, I shut my phone off on the 4th of July because I just could not take it anymore. And it's sad that you have to get to a point where you're going insane to then shut off your phone, but I'm going to try to shut it off more often without having to hit the insane level first. Just shut it off so that I don't have to breach or broach. Breach, broach, both. I'm wearing a brooch on my sweater, and I'm going to breach this contract of this intro. I'm going to go. I hope you guys enjoy this week's show. Again, please rate, subscribe, tell a friend. And if you are feeling extra generous, please go to patreon.com/KristenAndChill and throw me $1 a month. 12 bucks for you a year, $1 million for me. Because I have so many people on there. No, I don't. But if you'd like to go on there, please do. All right, that's it for me. I hope you guys enjoy this week's show. So we're redoing this, and it's like podcasts, you don't get dress rehearsals.
No.
You know, you do it. This is the show. This is the moment. It's huge. There's a Broadway opening, and there's lights and everything without having a rehearsal, which obviously is fine and good, but occasionally shit goes wrong, especially when you have someone like me leading the ship.
Yeah, you should be a better captain.
I know. The only ship I could captain would be Titanic. But speaking of captain, you go by Captain. And it was really random because some guy at a bar called me Captain the other night. And I was like, oh, wait, I know Captain. And he looked at me like I was insane. I'm like, no, it's a guy named Captain. And then he just thought I was like on drugs.
Whatever you're doing on the weekends, I want to do.
Well, actually, that's funny you would say that, because if you want to do what I do on the weekend, you'll stick pen caps up your nose. I know it's really random, but I just posted on Patreon a video of myself and resident consultant Jen putting pen caps in our noses to make ourselves sneeze while we were at a hotel room this past Saturday.
Oh, this is great.
And I said, most people on a Saturday night in hotel rooms would be doing drugs, but not us. We're sticking pen caps up our nose, but we look like we're doing drugs. So someone wrote to me immediately and was like, you should take that down because it literally looks like you are doing drugs. But I'm like, but no, we're just sticking pen caps up our nose. Like, I'll have video proof. And they're like, no, because the screenshots, it just take it down. So I took it down. But that's what I do on my weekends. I stick a pen cap up my nose to make myself sneeze. Okay, so we'll just get into things I tell my therapist, and this will be, I'll start. So this will be mine. So I used to stick a pen cap up my nose. I've never talked about this before, but it was a strange little addiction because sneezing feels so good.
It does.
Doesn't it feel good? It's like people, it's like a little mini orgasm.
Yeah.
And so when I was younger, my brother would stick a pen cap up his nose. And I saw him doing it, and he'd sneeze, and I thought it was funny, and he would do it to be funny. So right. Then we started having these sneezing contests, like who could sneeze more, who could do like more sneezes in a row, what noises could we make while we were sneezing, like animal noises, et cetera, things that were just weird. And so then, you know, we were just being kids, and it was that. That was it. I would do it occasionally in school where, like, if a teacher was facing the chalkboard, I would do the pen cap and then just sneeze a lot. And they'd be like, oh my God, bless you, bless you, bless you. And it wouldn't stop. That was part of my dumb class clownery, which was idiotic. But then in college, I must have took it to another level because...
Hey, Kristen here. One of many times throughout the show that I'm going to be butting in to make commentary. Because sometimes when I edit the show, I listen too closely and I hear things that I say and I'm like, oh, geez, what an idiot. Or I speak incorrectly. For example, maybe I just did this there. But I think I was supposed to say taken it to another level rather than took it to another level. And I think I must have some level of OCD. So I don't like there to be mistakes or vulnerabilities or whatever. And there's a quote from Charles Bukowski that's something like, if you point out the, this is totally paraphrased and absolutely wrong, but it's something like, if you point out a flaw of yourself, then it disarms the other people from being able to use it against you. And I used to do that as a kid. I would always point things out to disarm other people. Like, you know, if they were going to make fun of me, I made fun of me first. It took power away. So right now, taking power away from everyone thinking, ugh, the word was taken, not took, dummy. You guys got no power. I'm over here like all power Hitler. Not really like Hitler, but anyway, enjoy the rest of the show, and I will be back.
I ended up having severe nosebleeds.
So just like a cokehead.
Right. I'm so naive because I don't do drugs. I'm not like in the world of it. It doesn't even come to my mind. So I had to go to the to urgent care a couple times because I would have these insane nosebleeds. And so they would ask, do you do cocaine? Like, are you doing drugs? And I'm like, no, I'm sticking a pen cap up my nose, which is like, I kind of wish I could just say I was doing cocaine.
Yeah.
But to say, no, it's just from a pen cap. It's worse because then it's like, well, should we admit you to a mental hospital? Like what? Mm. And so anyway, it got so bad. And I wasn't, while the nosebleeds were happening, I wasn't continually putting the pen cap up my nose anymore. I had stopped, but I think it just, whatever in my nose had already ruptured or whatever it was damaged enough that I would once a week just have this massive nosebleed. And so anyway, it got to the point where I had to have my nose cauterized.
Yeah, which is a cokehead thing.
Right. And so she said, I've never cauterized anyone's nose from pen caps. And I was like, okay, well, let's not get crazy here. Sometimes it's a bobby pin. Sometimes right. You could even do it with a wadded up tissue that's really skinny. So it's not just pen caps that I'm abusing.
And so it's really just to get the mini orgasm of the sneeze.
Yeah, it just feels good. Because you know that feeling when you're like about to sneeze?
Yeah.
And then when you don't, it's so disappointing.
Well, see, I don't like to sneeze so much. So I actually rub one of my eyes. And then
you prevent the sneeze.
Yeah.
Yeah. There used to be a thing that kids would say, I don't know if it works, but they'd say, just say watermelon, 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 and you won't sneeze. And I don't know why anyone would do that. I want the sneeze. I am welcoming the sneeze.
Yeah,
well, unless, of course,
I'm in some sort of dating scenario or something, right, and I have a booger explode out of my nose. But other than that, yes, I accept the sneeze always.
I was very self-conscious about having carry around like a little mirror that my mom gave me so I could just like check. And like I carried that around.
No, it's not for lipstick, I swear.
Well, no, that's what it looked like. Right. You know, I just went to my mom's like, can I get a little mirror? And she's like, for what? And I'm like, constantly worried that there's a booger hanging out of my nose. And she's like, okay, here you go. And then it was like all through middle school and all through high school, I was constantly like checking in the mirror.
Well, it's the problem with the booger hanging out of the nose is that that never ends. It's not like acne where it's supposed to go away once you're a teenager, you know, like right. Your entire life. Yes. No matter what age, we never escape the booger. I think that's my new catchphrase.
You know, no, when somebody asks you what you're doing, you just say, I'm trying to escape the booger, you know?
Right. I mean, that's literally a daily task. But I have found that keeping the nose hairs in check will prevent the little like white flakes from kind of catching easily. You know, when you just have like a white little wispy thing, you don't even really know it's there. You can't feel it.
Right.
But it's kind of caught in the hairs. Keeping them trim, that's the way to avoid that.
When they cauterize your nose, doesn't it like burn all the hair?
Yeah, I think it must have. I mean, it was so long ago. It was in college. So I was like 20 or 21. But
that's like yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Yesterday.
Oh, my God. It was 2 weeks ago, actually. Oh. But when I got it done, it was pretty embarrassing because what I remember is there being like a dark ring around my nostril for several days. And I don't know if that was like burnt skin or what that was, but I had to go to work and wait tables, I remember, with this ring around my nose. And it's like, we don't know. Is this girl picking her nose? We don't want her touching our food. So I was very uncomfortable the whole time.
Is she on drugs?
Yeah. And then I looked like I was on drugs. She's like, oh, like just a loser waitress who just like does crack or something, you know, like, no. I love sneezing. But it is. It's like almost weirder to say that.
It's yeah. I'd almost be like, wait, you love sneezing. Okay, maybe you should just do drugs.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think sneezing is the gateway drug. Or it's like the gateway. It's like the new pot. Like sneezing gets you into pot. Pot gets you into other drugs or something. But I want to get to what your thing is for things I tell my therapist. Because right before we started taping, you said, you can't lie. And I almost feel like that's a lie in itself.
No, I can't. And I don't know. I think it came from my father because my father has a very difficult time lying. He was a detective, and when he became a detective, it was either he was going to become a detective or he was going to become like a minister. Do some good in the world.
Right.
But which is weird though, because he also like his first apartment was somebody's garage and he like drank whiskey a lot, but
sounds like a minister.
Yeah, sounds like a but it's just weird. Like I can ask him questions and you can tell that he has to give you the answer or he's going to get sick. And
like, so it'll like give him like a knot in his stomach if he lies, like, oh, I can't believe I just did that. Like that kind of sick.
Yeah. Like I can not tell the truth. Like if there's a conversation and somebody doesn't ask me the correct question, I can then just answer the question how they answered it. But if they ask me like something like directly, I have to answer it correctly or I feel awful.
Okay, well, so scenario, if you have a girlfriend and she says, how do I look in this, and she looks terrible, what do you do there?
I'm saying she looks terrible.
Really?
I mean, yeah, it's,
this could be why you're single.
Yeah, probably why I got a divorce.
That's true. So, yeah. Yeah, you're like, do you love me? No. Okay, I guess I can't lie.
But yeah, I think she knew. I think she also knew that I couldn't lie about stuff.
Right.
So
it's a good thing, but it must make certain things difficult because etiquette-wise or living in a society, sometimes you have to lie. Not that I'm promoting lying, but, you know, if you're running late, are you just being like, I am late and it's my fault? Or, oh, sorry, traffic was bad. Like, can you do those little white lies? Which, by the way, I don't really do because people just know I'm late in general, so I can't ever blame it on traffic. It's always me. But okay, so you don't do that.
It'll just be whatever happened. And like, I'm very hard on myself though too, so it tends to be like, this is where I messed up. You know, like I was supposed to be somewhere at noon, but I messed up at 8:30. You know,
right?
Like,
Right. You can always trace it back like a million steps as to where you screwed up and why you're late.
Yeah.
Like from the minute you hit snooze on your alarm clock, there's just a series of events that are leading you to, not leading you, you're leading the events because it's all your own choice, but you're making yourself late.
Yeah. And my mother's always super late and my father's always super early. So I go back and forth. Like sometimes I'm like 15, 20 minutes early. Sometimes I'm 15, 20 minutes late.
And your parents aren't divorced?
They are like divorced.
Oh, they are. Okay. I was going to say that's grounds for divorce. Yeah. The really early and the really late. That can't work. That cannot work no matter what.
No. And my father's hardcore, like conservative, and my mother's hardcore Democrat. So I don't know how they made it 20 years.
Well, 20 years. Okay. Well, they suffered long enough.
Yeah.
But it's weird. Like, I don't know how people get together like that. Like, my parents are completely different. They're still together, but I think they're still together by like default.
Yeah, but I think people say that and they look at their parents and think, wow, they kind of seem miserable together. But if they've been together for 20 some years, they're still best friends.
Yeah, right. Like, my parents have been together for 50 years, I think. I don't know if it's 45 or 50. To say 50 is freaky. But yeah, at that point, it's like an umbilical cord has grown between the two of you and you really can't sever it. It's just, it's there. You got to deal with it, whether it's ugly or not. And you're just hooked for life. That's what it is. Unless you're really like, you know, crazy independent traveler all the time working. But my parents aren't like that at all. So it's like, they're just, you know, they're each other's person.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how Grey's Anatomy was the reason that finding your person, that's from Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, I think it is. I remember at the time my ex-wife watching that show and constantly like talking to me about like her person. But the fact that I wasn't her person, I was like, this is not a good sign.
Yeah, that's weird. I think you are supposed to marry your person.
Yeah, but sometimes somebody's person is of the same sex.
Yeah, like I have, like, I would say I have a person, like my friend Jen. I think she's my person, but there's no attraction there. Hey, it's me again, just cutting in to take this opportunity to hit on Jen. Jen, I've been hiding this from you the whole time. There is attraction there. Please tell your parents. We'll have a very lovely future. Bye. But I think you could also find a male version of that, or like an opposite sex or the person you're attracted to version of your person.
Well, and I think I've also been really thinking about this a lot lately, you know, being 38 years old and meeting new people and going on dates and things like that. Is like, I think it's also really important as we get older to find people that are not just good to us, but good for us.
Oh, absolutely. And do you feel the same about friendships? Like, I actually, so let's transition into socially challenged. And I do this on the show as almost like a learning lesson for myself, because I don't really get the idea of friends in general. So tell me how you operate socially.
Well, what's interesting is for me is having a father that is, he's just so blatantly honest about things. And I remember one time I used to be a bank teller, and this guy comes in and he recognizes my last name and he asked me, is Skip, that's my father's name, is Skip your father? I said, yeah. He goes, I was your dad's best man in his wedding.
Oh, cool.
And this is 20 some years later. And I'm like thinking, what was strange is they have the same haircut and the same weird mustache. And I thought, I can see that you guys were best
friends.
Was
this guy also a detective? He sounds like he would be a detective with a mustache.
He looked like a detective, but I think he was like an accountant or something.
He was like
that.
No, no, no. I became the minister, so it was your dad's other half.
Yeah. And but you know, I mentioned, you know, to my father, hey, I met this guy and he was your best man. Oh yeah, I haven't seen him for years. Why not? He's like, well, that's just kind of how life works, you know. He's my best friend and he was in my wedding, and then he got married and had kids and we just kind of grew apart. So you know, being 38 and divorced, and also she had two kids that I was raising, so I go from dad mode. My oldest stepson just graduated high school, so that makes me a very old 38 year old.
Wow.
And I've I had tons of friends early 20s, and then it became, I started touring and started working every weekend as a musician, and all the friends go away. And then the guys that you play in bands with, you think you're friends with. Well, once the band breaks up, they don't call you back.
Yeah.
And so, but I moved away. And so I had no friends where we moved to. We moved back to her hometown. I had zero friends. And all I did was just be a dad and come home and listen to Adam Carolla every day. And if I didn't have Adam Carolla, I mean, Adam Carolla became my best
friend. He was your
friend. In my head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I went through all that. And then when I moved back after the divorce, every single one of my friends, and this is no lie, every single one of my male friends that are married, if we hung out and went drinking, at some point they broke down and cried.
Whoa.
And told me how much they missed me and how much they missed some of their friends and how they just miss seeing people and they miss laughing. And they
it's like, well, that's why you're not seeing your friends, because you're crying all the time. No one wants to hang out with a crybaby.
Right, right. Well, the best is my best friend from high school was crying in my front seat. And he's notorious for having a very small bladder. And
I thought you were going to say penis. I really did. Because he was crying.
Well, that too,
I just, it would add up.
I don't want to say it on the show, but but he was, you know, crying and saying how much he missed me. And he was also making up silly lies. Like, you know, I text you all the time and you never text me back.
Oh, you can't lie about that. There's
that's
proof.
Not true.
That you can't lie about stuff where there's actual proof. Oh, I text you all the time. Really? Look at my Verizon bill. Literally,
yeah,
no, you don't.
I actually pulled out my phone to prove him wrong, but since he has a small bladder, he like wiped his tears and went, "All right, good talk. I got to go
and
pee."
Just peed on the phone.
But yeah, but it's like every one of my friends that I've gone out with, you know, just me and them, they've kind of broken down and said, you know, I wish we hung out more, and I wish our friends did more stuff, and because the last friend that broke down and cried on me, I mean, I see him maybe once a year, twice a year. And it's not because he doesn't want to hang out with me. It's not because I don't want to hang out with him. It's just, you're so busy.
That's why it was good that my dad just used to say, "Who needs friends when you've got enemies?" That was always the phrase growing up all the time. And so it probably was implanted in my head that friends are enemies. Like, what's the difference?
Is he like a Russian spy or something?
I know, right? You'd think he'd be some sort of exotic, exciting type of person who has so many enemies, but he's like...
he has like one eye.
Right, no, he's just super mundane and boring. But he would use that as his joke because every Sunday he'd sit down to watch football and my dad has no friends. And so no friends would come over and he'd be like, "Quiet down, guys." But there'd be no one there. It would just be like me and my brother and he'd be talking to his friends. He's like, "Oh, I'm just talking to my friends." But then, you know, we joke about him not having friends. He would just say, "Who needs friends when you got enemies?" So,
yeah. And the truth is, it probably bothered him a little bit. But when you're taking care of kids, it's. I mean, I had a great friend come over last night just to have a beer, and he used to be this DJ, and not like a douchey DJ. Like he like made his own music and he made his own records and a super cool
guy. I feel
like
we need a differentiating term between DJ. Who's not douchey, yeah. And DJ who is douchey.
Right. And he's dealing with this thing. He's 40 years old and he's now like not doing gigs and he's not trying to have a nightlife and his kids are older.
Hey, hi, Kristen again. So I just wanted to give you guys a heads up. It's me again. Hey, hi. I'm doing this a lot this episode. So we jumped from Kristen and Chill to Mentally Chill, basically, going forward. So the show gets a bit darker. And if you are new to the show used to be called Mentally Chill, but now it's Kristen and Chill. But for old time's sake, since we're going to start to get into some more depression, suicide stuff, I'm going to throw in the old thunder intro. So get out those umbrellas, because here it comes, baby. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Mentally Chill. This is Kristen here. Obviously, I'm going to say my name 5,000 times this episode. Wait until you get to the end. I keep butting in and saying this is Kristen. So here's the rest of the show as Mentally Chill.
I was dealing with a lot of depression anyways during the marriage. So it was almost like she was just like, "Look, if this guy ends up killing himself, I don't really care." And so I'm like three blocks away from these kids. I have no friends. And I mean, that's how I discovered you.
Well, yeah, that's because that means that your life was going down a shitty path for a good reason, right? Yeah.
No, and I would tell, like, I mean, I was like calling like my father like every other day, and calling my older brother like every other day, because like I was like, I'm not gonna make it out. This is like, I'm like weeks away from not existing on this earth anymore. And I mean, it was awful. I remember my mom came, and I tell the story and everybody thinks it's sad, but I'm in a better place now. But she took me grocery shopping, which I didn't need, you know, but we're grocery shopping, and she says, well, I want to get some bleach to clean your bathroom in this new apartment. And I just threw the biggest fit, and she had no clue why I was throwing the biggest fit about not buying bleach, but it was because I knew she was going to leave and I was just going to drink the rest of the bottle.
Oh, God.
You know, because I just couldn't. It wasn't even about the loss of a relationship. It was like, it was basically like somebody was like, your kids are dead to you. And you did nothing to deserve that. And I really like question, you know, just life. And yeah. And I mean, I couldn't buy bleach. I couldn't buy knives. So like people would come over or, you know, look for like a knife to cut something. And I couldn't buy one. I didn't have a razor. I didn't have, you know, my boss at work is, you know, I'd have to go get my haircut more often because I'd have to trim up the beard. But I just knew that I couldn't have anything in that apartment that I could take my own life.
Holy moly. So, okay. So friends weren't really a priority at this point. No, like calling up for a beer wasn't really number one on your list. So did you call anyone for help, or did you reach out to friends, or?
You know, all these things kept happening, and it's weird because my dad has, you know, once you like coming out to your parents about depression is very similar, or at least I've been told by my friends that have come out to tell their parents that they're lesbian, right, or homosexual. It's like the same thing. And I remember like telling my dad one time, like, I think I have like severe depression. And he was like, yeah, whatever, you know. And then eventually I think my dad started seeing like this kid's, you know, going through all this stuff and I can't fix it, and medicine isn't fixing it, and the doctors can't fix it. And he sent me to a psychiatrist that was a good friend of his. And so then I remember my therapist saying, do you mind if I talk to your father about you? And I said, I don't care. And I think that's when my dad first realized, oh, my son really does have something. But he gave me this like really good talk that, you know, and Adam Carolla, there's this really good clip of Adam Carolla talking about like his parents not believing in him. And somebody like said it to this like real sad music, but he's talking about like, hey, look, you might have depression. Get up and go for a walk. Do 20 push-ups. Maybe 20 push-ups is harder for you, but make the choice to do it. And I just remember my dad, like, for months and months and months, it's your choice. It's your choice to be depressed. And I remember thinking, you're such an idiot. You don't know. Like, it's not a choice. But it is a choice. There's all these little choices about, like, the alarm clock goes off.
Yeah.
Get up, you know, drink water, get enough sleep. Get exercise, watch your diet.
Yeah, it's funny that you actually bring up the idea of choices, because I rarely ever talk about choices, which is my choice. But yesterday choice. I was taking a nap and my brother knocked. He came over and I was asleep. I didn't know he was here, and he knocked and woke me up, and he came in and I was basically just like, go away, I'm sleeping, like leave. But he really wanted to talk. He was really kind of struggling and having a hard time. And so I had to be a sister
against my will and, you know, wake up and tell him good, you know, like give him advice. And it was shitty. I didn't want to do it. But I had some really nice things to say, and it all was about choices. Like I was talking to my brother about how making choices is so huge and important. And as much as it feels like it's not a choice when we're in a certain situation, the choice that we're given once we're in that situation is our choice and is in our control. So that whole thing of like depression is a choice, it's like, no, it's not. It's not a choice, but it is a choice.
Right.
As hard as that choice may be, once you're in it, how you deal with it and how you get through it. So, but it's, the thing is, it's so much harder to make the right choice when you're in that state.
When you're depressed.
But once you realize it is about choices, I think you feel empowered. You feel like more in control. And I think part of depression is so feeling out of control, like you have no control over your future and that kind of thing. So choices are so powerful, especially choices to listen to this podcast and rate it 5 stars on iTunes. That's a good choice right there. Anyway, keep going.
Well, no. And so my therapist told me one time that being hydrated is actually better for you than medication. Having the right diet is better than medication.
When you hear something like that, do you instantly, my gut reaction is to go, oh, fuck off.
Well, I think they know so little. You know, look,
even though it's the truth, sad. I'm sure it's the truth. But, you know, when you're in that situation, like my mom would always say, go volunteer your time when you're depressed. It's not about you. And I would want to say, like, or I would usually say, that's not going to help me. Thanks a lot. That does nothing for me. But someone wrote me an email recently and I have to respond to him. It was so lovely. Mm-hmm. And he had a quote from, I don't know who said this, but it was something like, you're only depressed if you're thinking about yourself. And that was huge. Even though it's so like basic, I was like, oh my God. Yeah. If I'm not thinking about me, then I'm not focused on all the negative feelings that I have and all of that. My focus will be elsewhere. But when you hear someone say that to you when you're depressed, it's like, oh no, hell no, bitch. No, it has not because I'm selfish. It's because I can't control the way my brain feels. But when you step out of it, you're like, whoa, maybe it is because I'm focusing on what's bad about me and what's bad about my life and how I screwed up and how no one loves me and how I'll always be alone. It's like you realize it is a very like narcissistic. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's a very self-centered disease.
Yeah, it very much
it's like the Kardashian of diseases, like very into itself.
Yeah, it's the Kris
Jenner. Yeah, she's the manager for depression.
No, but I think you have to, you know, I've told a lot of people because they've heard me talk about my depression and they go, I'm so down, what can I do? And I go, serve somebody else. I also think that we have a bad time with gratitude. Like I think I've had times where I felt really low and then I just have this like thought process of gratitude. Like, you know, like there's people in this world that don't have shoes. There's kids in this world that never had a pair of shoes. There's kids right now that are starving. There are people that are starving to death. There are homeless people for no fault of their own, they're homeless. There's people in 2008 that lost their house, that lost everything. Like there's people that have no arms. There's people that have no legs. There's, you know what I mean? I just go through all these.
Yeah. And some people that are extra cynical would say, yeah, well, that's going to make me even more depressed thinking about all that stuff. But that's when it comes back to choices, because you can choose in that scenario to not look at it as doomsday. The world is the worst place in the world. You can choose to look at it as, I am very blessed. What can I do to make that stuff happen less? Hey guys, Kristen here, as if it would be anyone else, just cutting in to call myself out on this and just say that I am full of shit, tons and tons of shit. When I'm feeling really down, there's no way that I'm thinking, oh, you know, I'm going to take this as a moment to make the world a better place. This is just me trying to sound inspirational. I don't know what I was thinking. All full of shit. That's what I do. Just bullshit.
Well, I'm one, based off what my therapist says, I'm one of very few severe, you know, diagnosed as severe depressive people that is on no medication.
Oh, are you? So you're not on any right now at all?
No, because when I mean, so like I said, going back to that apartment, I took out everything from the apartment, and then all I thought about was I can hang myself with a belt, and I thought about that probably 1,000 times every night.
Oh my God.
And it was really bad. And then once it was getting real bad where it's like, that's all I thought about was I'm going to hang myself with a belt and this will be over. And I became obsessed with this writer, David Foster Wallace.
Oh yeah.
And he, another individual that was on medication, but the side effect was randomly he would get horrible stomach issues. So he got these stomach issues. They put him in the hospital. This is like years. He's married. He's happy. He's battling depression and winning. And they decide, you're on a very old medication. And this side effect, we don't want you in the hospital for your stomach. So they gave him different medication. It wasn't working. He knew it wasn't working. Called his family, called his mom, come live with me. Take care of me. I'm not doing well. I'm suicidal. And they try all these different medications. She goes out to walk his dogs and he hangs himself.
Oh my God.
And so I'm in this apartment on drugs that I shouldn't be on. I was on antipsychotics and all this stuff. And I've had all these friends that have been on uppers and little things, but you know, when somebody says, I'll give you this pill and it makes you a little bit happier or it takes off the sting off a little bit. But the side effect is you might want to drive your car off a cliff. We should be stopping and saying the side effect is too dramatic and we can't give these people, you know, I haven't been on pills for 4 years now. I don't think about killing myself. That's not even an option.
So what changed? Like, how did you get to this point?
A lot of it was just, like I said, my father saying that it's a choice. And that's when I decided I know it's wrong for me to be on this medication.
Wow. So it hit you. It really hit you. It's really hard because of those kind of things where someone says something. So people can listen or people can hear it. Like yesterday, I was really hoping when I was talking about these choices, my brother wasn't just like listening. I don't know if I'm using that right, but he wasn't just listening. I was hoping he was actually hearing it and it was hitting him and soaking in through his ears. Like, this is a small example, but my friend Jen and I went to Buffalo this weekend because a guy that she works with is an agent of one of the football players. And so she told me that several times, but for some reason it didn't really register. Like, it didn't sink in. And then once we were there, I was like, oh, this guy who's a principal is also an agent for football players. Like, and it kind of sunk in once I saw him in the environment and we got like a helmet and all that kind of stuff. And that's like the,
we got a helmet.
Whoa, now I get it. He's got a helmet. This is a big deal. So when you're going through something and someone's saying it's all about choices, it might just go in one ear and out the other until you're in the scenario like I was in to see the helmet and go, oh, okay, I get it now. Like, now it's actually sinking in. I'm recording this. This is all seeping into my brain and it's soaking into my system. Whereas, you know, if it's not the right time or the right place and someone says to you, it's all about choices, you could be so not there yet in your own journey that it doesn't mean anything. So it's good that you were at the place when your dad said that you were able to really make it mean something, you know?
Yeah. And I always tell people, I think it's different for everybody, but to me, I look at whatever I have and whatever you want to label it. It's like, to me, it's very similar to like alcoholism, where I know I have to wake up and go, I have this thing and what can I do today? And can I make it better? And I mean, just last week I saw this video on he's a heavyweight boxer named Tyson Fury, and he's come out recently and talked about, so he won the championship and was like, cool, I'm done. I don't need to prove myself anymore. I'm a multimillionaire. And he stopped boxing, he stopped training, and he ends up 400 and some pounds. and suicidal, and he was drinking every day and doing drugs and all this stuff, and he didn't really know what it was. I mean, other than he's been sad his whole life. And I watched this video of him talking about his struggles and how he decided. He made the choice. He was at a party. He had one drink. He thought he was going to just hang out all night and get smashed. And he's like, something hit me that I need to change my life. He called his wife up in that moment and said, tomorrow I am changing my life. And he woke up and started training.
Yeah, it's almost like something needs to click and go off in your brain to make you make that switch. And no one can, you know, you can read as many books as you want or have as many lectures as you want from people who love you until you're at that point to change and you're really ready for this to be it. You're not going to do it, you know, until that moment. And it's, I guess, probably similar to alcoholism and stuff. Like, until you admit there's a problem, you really have to be really aware. You can't be living in denial at all.
Right. But the tricky thing becomes when you make the decision and it's not, you know, I guess I could say that I made the decision, let's say 4 years ago. The last month or so has been, other than I don't have suicidal thoughts, the last month has been maybe the hardest since then. So it's not like I decided and then 4 years later, I'm like, I'm the best I've ever been. It's 4 years later, and I'm like, I'm just above hanging myself in an apartment. And so that's what's difficult.
I think that's also a lesson, is that like this is not like a linear thing where you just get better and then you're better for the rest of your life. It's like something that you constantly need to be working on, making choices about, putting effort into. And it's like, you know, if you have diabetes, it's a constant management of diabetes your entire life. And so if you're depressed, you can get better, but it's going to be, you can be healthy, but it's going to be management your entire life. And so I know for me, it's going to be management my entire life. It's not just like getting a cure.
And I know it sounds like super cheesy, but the thing is this guy, this heavyweight champion of the world, decided that he was going to come back and prove to everybody that this giant man, I think he's 6'6 or something, this giant man, heavyweight champion of the world, was being defeated by a silent killer, is what he called it. And he comes back and he fights this guy named Dante Wilder. And Dante Wilder is undefeated. And when he hits people and knocks them out, like, it looks like he just killed them. Like, they've been saying that he might be the hardest hitting person to ever live. And when he's knocked people out where they're unconscious and they have to bring stretcher out. And when he knocks these people out, they do not get back up.
Does that ever cross over into he's a murderer now? Like, he knows his own strength and what it's going to do. Like, is there intent behind that?
Well, if he hits somebody outside of the ring, yes.
But in the ring, you could kill someone and not get in trouble.
Right.
Yeah, that's murder heaven. Right.
So Tyson Fury is dealing with this depression. He loses all this weight, comes back, fights Deontay Wilder, is kicking the guy's ass for 12 rounds. He is going to win the fight. And then all of a sudden, they call him the Brown Bomber, knocks him down, and he looks like he was shot, and he just drops like a ton of bricks. They get to the four count, and you just see something like, you can physically see, all you have to do is look up Tyson Fury depression and it'll show you this scene.
Uh-huh.
But it looks as if his spirit just re-entered his body and his eyes open and he jumps up and he fights and he ends up not, he should have won the fight because he won most of the rounds, but they didn't let him win because he got knocked out.
Yeah.
But at the end, they both get a draw. So he didn't win or lose. And
that's awesome.
But what's so fascinating to me is when they say, everybody's asking him, how did you get up? And he said, I just knew I had to prove to some kid out there dealing with depression, see what I just did. I just got knocked out and I got right back up for you.
Right.
And it's like when you watch that thing, you go,
yeah, something
I want to try
clicked.
Harder, you know?
Yeah. You can see that actually can happen. Something can go off in your mind to drive you to do great, awesome, crazy things that seem almost like miracles.
Yeah, we started off the show all happy.
Yeah, this is your fault, by the way. It's your fault, but I shouldn't have given you the wheel, but I gave you the wheel. But that's okay. It's good because, you know, I've made the show a lot lighter, but people who listen to the show still deal with depression and deal with mental health. So it's relevant. So thank you for making this relevant to them. So they're probably thanking you as well. But my depression isn't, because I'm like, I'm trying to keep it a little shallower. But you have a really unique story, and I'm sure people can relate. So thank you for sharing that. And I don't want to like jump straight off of it, but we only have
something lighter. Yeah. It's all about choices.
It is choices. And I'm choosing to end on a funnier note, even though it might not be appropriate.
Wait, side note though, when I started making the choice, one of the things was listening to you on your show.
That's so ridiculous.
Because I got enjoyment and I laughed.
That's awesome.
And I started watching comedians in cars getting coffee. Anytime I was feeling down, I just go, is there something out there that can make me laugh?
Right. And you make the choice.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I actually recently, just with my stupid hair, I got my hair done, which I don't love, but that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is it has been bothering me. My hair is so long. I hate getting it cut. It was really dark. I wanted to change it up. And I'm every single day going, oh, I really wanted to get my hair done. And all of a sudden it hit me. I was like, oh, it's my choice to call and make an appointment and get my hair done. It's that fucking simple. And so
you could ask your mom to do it for you. Hey, mom.
Yeah, but I also want to be able to leave the house and not cry. So you can apply that to choices within depression or your mental health when, you know, you can help yourself. There are certain things that you can do to help yourself, and it's that you need to realize it. And it's that wake up moment. It's the moment of him in the ring and, you know, coming to and being like all of a sudden back in his body. But yeah, it's totally about choices, and it's empowering. I think once that really hits you, it is super empowering, because recently with choices, I've been thinking, okay, well, I'm 36. It's not that old, but I've spent my entire adulthood so far being depressed and not taking advantage of all the blessings and gifts. And I hate to say that too, because I feel like it's cheesy, but it's true. Not taking advantage of all these wonderful things that I've been given in life. And so I've been trying to make the choice of living a fuller life, because it's the only one I have. And I'm going to be here regardless, because I'm not committing suicide. So I'll either make it really good by choosing to try to make it really good, or I'll stay in bed all day and let it just spin out of control. And so I think it's almost,
but sometimes it's okay. Like, but that's,
oh, believe me. Yeah. I'm going to be in bed a lot. Don't worry about that.
Right. If you want to stay in bed and watch something, or you want to have a lazy day, let yourself know that that's okay.
Oh my God. Totally. You know, absolutely. It just don't make it your routine and your lifestyle, and in all those small steps of making the right choice, the small little choice will add up to, you know, a gooder ending. But I want to say, like, it literally will lead to, you know, and this sounds cheesy, but it will lead to me being able to go on like a beautiful vacation, because I've put myself in a position that's something I've wanted to do for so long. I haven't gone on like I haven't been out of the country in a long time. And so it's like almost like I have this end goal of like, wow, how awesome will that feel when I've enabled myself financially to be able to buy a plane ticket and go to Bali. And
Bali,
I don't know. I have no idea where I want to go. I don't really, really even want to go anywhere, but I do want to just be able
to
do stuff
to
for
Ireland.
Myself. Okay. So going to Ireland, you do that and you're like, wow, I did this for myself because I made all of the right choices leading up to being able to go to Ireland. I made the choice to get a job. I made a choice to go in every day. I made a choice to study hard. I made a choice to blah, blah, blah. And then that adds up to that beautiful experience you'll get to have down the road. So anyway, you brought out
Did you get your hair cut before or after the bowling clip?
Before. And so my hair isn't even that different. And I spent a lot of money. I'm a little upset. But I wanted it shorter and I wanted it lighter. And so it It's not much shorter and it's not much lighter, but it's on its way there. So I'm actually going to follow up next week and get her to cut it more. So,
hey, Kristen, cutting in here. Just to update you guys on the haircut. Really, really upset about the haircut. Trying to stay chill, as you could tell here when I recorded this. I was trying to stay chill, but it's terrible. This is why I never get my hair cut. I've had a terrible few weeks. My depression's gotten worse. It must be from the scissors. Stay away from the scissors. Anyway, back to the show.
Tell everybody your Instagram handle so they can see the bowling clip.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good idea. I'm not good at this promotion stuff. They can see it at Chris Karn, but it would be on my stories. So because I didn't post it as an actual
on
post.
Your stories? Oh,
no.
It was adorable.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I was bowling with the Bills. The Buffalo Bills. It was pretty cool. I made friends.
There were giants next to
me. Yeah, I know. I know. I actually want to post a little thing that was really funny. I walked up to them and I just wanted to get a picture as if I was like eating at the table with them, like I'm their friend. Because it was just a bunch of dudes, huge dudes in their jerseys. And so my friend Jen taped me going and sitting with them. But I wish you could hear what I was saying because I was like, let's just act normal. Like we're friends. Like we do this all the time. And you know, I was like, oh, man, those coaches, they're tough on us. Right. Those coaches. Like, and they just players were they were getting a kick out of it. But yeah. So
and now,
that's on Chris Karn.
How many of
Instagram.
Them? Yeah. And how many of them are following you now?
One of them, which pretty impressive. I do have a good good connection, right?
Guys,
what's the word?
Strange.
Like when things I didn't really talk to them in terms of like just, hey, I'm this is my name, this is who I am. I only talked to one guy.
Right, but that's why guys are strange because they can just all guys need, not all guys, but what I've found is all guys need is like a window, like maybe a couple minute window. And that's enough for us to decide if we want to really pursue that person.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, in this specific context, I'm not the NFL player type. You know, like there was a girl there who was, I think, married to one or dating one. And she was just this like hot piece, you know, like great. I'm cute, but it's not like I'm like a hot piece. And she was a hot piece of ass. So anyway.
Yeah, but personality and humor goes a long way.
Yeah, but I don't know if jocks are necessarily known for their personality or sense of humor, so they might not be focusing on that too hard.
No,
I love football
players.
You don't
want to stereotype too much because they're – look, you know, I mean, you'd have to feed those linemen a lot, but
– Well, I would, and that's the thing is I don't cook, but who I did make friends with is one of the linemen. He's taking over for Kyle Williams, who is a huge part of the Bills' defense.
Not to be confused with Kyle, the regular on the show, whose name is also Kyle Williams, who will be on next week and is just as beloved as the Kyle Williams in Buffalo. But anyway, this Kyle Williams is being replaced because he retired with this guy, Harrison Phillips. But he was a big part of the Bills' defense.
Huge part of their winning defense.
Well, we actually had a good defense. We really did. I will stand up for us and say that. And so anyway, this guy, Harrison, who's taking over for him, is who I became friends with. But you can tell he was really interested in like comedy. He knows Theo Vaughn was just, you know, able to talk about going to see comedy. So we made friends because we had that kind of common connection. So now he follows me on Twitter and you should too at Kristen Karn. But anyway, I'm going to wrap this up because I've got to go tape my other show with Marnie, who you know, because you enjoy that show, which is awesome. So
I used to. I don't listen to it anymore. No offense.
That's okay. I'm glad because that means you're in a better place because it's kind of a self-help show. So
yeah.
If you're not listening, that's a good thing, but don't tell Marnie I said that. And
well, it's a great show for any guy that's getting back into the dating world.
Yeah. And they should check that out. But more importantly, not that you need more listeners, but in my couple, two or three that you'll get from my show are going to be very influential on your ad dollars that you have coming in. But tell me about your show and where they can find it. And it's an awesome show about crime. So
we do a weekly show. It's normally two parts, an hour, the first part, an hour, the second part on a different crime every week, whether that's a murder or a missing person. We do solved crimes. We do unsolved crimes. We also do serial killer profiles and criminal profiles. And it's called True Crime Garage. And you can find us on all the podcast stuff or just go to truecrimegarage.com. truecrimepod.com.
Awesome. I love true crime so much. And on the last podcast I mentioned, it's weird that for my entertainment, I need more people to be murdered. Or like, it's just a strange, it's a strange dynamic, but it's so fascinating and interesting. And I think psychologically, I'm very drawn to it because it's just unique, interesting, and
well, here's
up.
What I find really interesting lately is I've met Chris D'Elia. I've met his opener, Michael Linoche, Tom Segura, you, so many great comedians.
Oh, yes, I'm on that list, yes.
That are into true crime.
Yeah, it's because
Bill Burr is huge into true crime.
There's something
Bill Hader.
That makes so much sense. There's something human and like real about it that mm-hmm. comedians, I think, are attracted to anything that's real and authentic. And even if it's bad, it's fascinating because there's something human behind it. So, yeah. So check out I don't want to say your regular first name. Should I just say Captain? The Captain?
Yeah.
Okay. So check out the Captain's podcast, True Crime Garage, on iTunes or anywhere you can find podcasts. And please rate and review this show as well, which would be very helpful for me. And please share the show with a friend. I'd love to keep the show growing, both of those. And you can do that by sending it to a friend, rating and reviewing. And thank you, Captain, so much. I don't know if I should say the Captain first. Thank you. But I have when we taped before, I did say you're kind of like the maestro from Seinfeld. So thank you to the Captain for doing this
thank
and for being
maestro.
So honest. It's awesome to have authentic people on the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I've been a huge fan of yours. And everybody, rate, review, subscribe, donate. It's a lot of work she's putting in. Support good people.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. You know what's crazy is that it is a lot of work. No one would have any idea. And then once I want to explain it, it's like, we just edit. No, there's so much more. There's so much more. It's like you saw a ghost and the other person didn't see it and they don't believe you. I'm like, no, it was there and it was scary. And this is a lot of work and it's scary. Work is definitely scarier than a ghost. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Thank you, the Captain, for being here. And remember, stay bored and sad enough to listen, but not too bored and sad. And remember to stick around for Tough Love with Uncle Tony. Okay, bye guys.
Hey, how you doing, sweetheart? Okay, I think I have a sex addiction. Do you think that's even a real thing? Sex addiction. Yeah, that's like, it's like having a breathing addiction. Yeah, we do it. We all fucking do it. It's not an addiction. An addiction is heroin or cocaine, you know? It's not sex. We all do it. I mean, you know, before all the computers and stuff like that, they just called it beating off. There you go. Or I don't know what the girls do. What do they call it when a girl beats off? Fiddling around? I don't know. I don't even know if women do that. They shouldn't. It's a man's world.